from 90.1 WFYI Public Radio. Welcome to The Art of the Matter, made possible by the ongoing support from listeners like you. And from the Palladium at the Center for the Performing Arts, opening in January 2011.
Hello and welcome to The Art of the Matter. I'm Sharon Gamble. The music for today's show is courtesy of the Buselli Wallerab Jazz Orchestra from their Heart and Soul album, available through Owl Studios at owlstudios.com.
And I'm Travis DiNicola. Today I'll get a preview of the upcoming Clues Presents season at Clues Hall.
I'll find out how food for thought is nurturing creativity at the Stutz Building.
And I'll get a preview of the Center for Performing Arts in Carmel. And of course we'll have our arts calendar, a very brief one, that we call...
What do we do? All that and more right after the latest news from NPR. Modern dance, taiko drums, screaming guitars, and some of those blue men will be taking the stage at Clues Hall this season. Travis DiNicola got the preview from James Kramer, Community Relations Manager, and Joshua Lingenfelter, the Director of Marketing for Clues Memorial Hall.
So many things coming up. Give me just a very quick background, though, on how it works with Clues Hall and Clues Presents, because certainly you're on the Butler campus, for those three people who maybe don't know that, but and you work very closely with Butler, but you're also your own sort of organization.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, it does certainly serve. Over half of the events in there are Butler sponsored or Butler-related events, and then the rest are then outside professional performing ensembles or groups, whether it be a local presentation or whether it's performances that are brought in by outside presenters or promoters or our own Clues Presents program. So it really is a great blend, a great mix, and we think for the community it's wonderful to have that great variety that you can see and inspire the next generation of professional artists who are students now or vice versa, for those professionals to work with the students when they come into the city or are, you know, if they're resident companies, to be able to work with. And really, it's I think it's a wonderful working relationship.
And as you said, I mean, Clues Presents is sort of its own entity. I do want to be clear that it's, even though I also know you work in tandem with, like, the Broadway Across America programs that come in, that some of those are at Clues, slightly different as well.
Right, and the Indianapolis Opera, you know, again, other major presenters that have their seasons there as well. So there is that separation that we have our own presenting season, and is again that example of the Broadway, the opera, Clues Presents, you know, a Butler Ballet season, you know, various other groups that have their season there that are considered resident companies and have their, you know, a good portion of their performances there. So
keeps
yeah,
you guys busy.
Yeah, it does. It does. This year we have six.
Yeah. Well, tell me what you got.
Well, we've got. We've got a few different things that we think, you know, in all honesty, we say it every year that this is the best season we've ever put on, and we'll say it again this year that this is the best season that we've ever put on.
Just keeps getting better.
But I think this is something that's, we put together what we feel like is a bit of a powerhouse season, and we wanted to really take a lot of risks to get, you know, acts either back to return to Clues or to get things that are going to be very unique to the market that, you know, you wouldn't necessarily see unless Clues was bringing it.
Sure.
And it's one of the things that we've really, I think that Clues over the years has excelled at, is really bringing performances that are unique that, you know, really only Clues would bring to Indianapolis. So we're going to kick off the season with Guitar Masters, which is Eric Johnson, Andy McKee, and Pepino De Agostino. And this is interesting for us because, and it's October 2nd on a Saturday. And the interesting thing about this show is that Andy McKee is really a YouTube sensation. He's one of the biggest musical artists on YouTube.
Is he that kid on YouTube?
He's not a kid. But he had this guitar video, and it was a song called Drifting, song that he had written, and he plays it in one take.
Yeah.
And it is reminiscent of Preston Reed or Michael Hedges or even Leo Kottke, but, you know, it's, his hands are all over this guitar.
Yeah, okay.
You know, so he's playing both the bass parts and the melody and, you know, comping the chords for a very keyboard sound and then playing the percussion all at the same time. And you know, here he became like one of the biggest musicians on, you know, on YouTube.
Mm-hmm.
And having him,
and now he's touring.
Yeah, and having him with Eric Johnson, who's, you know, a Grammy Award winning guitarist, and then having Peppino De Agostino, who has been a long time, you know, sort of a people's choice of guitarists. Having the three of those in one concert is a rare experience. So something we're excited about, both because it sort of takes the new generation of guitarists and does something where we've said, hey, this guy is really popular on YouTube, and so now we're going to bring him so you can see him live.
That's pretty cool.
So that's the first show.
Now, with that show, will they be playing, do you know, separately as well as together? Or
Our understanding is that they will play separately, but as we've talked to them, as they get kind of together and start working through some things, it's very possible we're going to see some collaboration.
We'll jam at the end, maybe.
And hopefully that's the case. You know, sometimes they leave it so free that, you know, we don't know until that night that it's going to happen. But in a lot of cases it does, but it makes for an interesting night regardless.
Sure, of course. And then after that?
Well, after that we have Paul Taylor Dance Company, which is coming in. In November.
One of my favorites.
Great
modern dance company.
It's going to be Friday, November 5th. And it is. We are very fortunate here to have the company come in. Paul Taylor is still alive and choreographing. We're actually going to have one of his newest works on the program. And hopefully the rest of the program is going to be a little bit more like a retrospective type of thing, to see various hallmark pieces or various portions and generations of his choreography, since he's been at this for decades.
Yes.
You know, it's wonderful. He's now in his 80s and still working with the company very actively. And of course, locally, then we have Susan McGuire, who's on faculty at Butler University, to be our, and she's a former director of the second company and works in the workshops and a variety of ways, is still very much connected to the company.
Mm-hmm.
So having her here, having her knowledge and experience to be able to help us prepare the local community, we're going to be doing some outreach opportunities with master classes and with teaching students some of the repertoire, so they can then share that with us, and we all then have a better understanding of what we'll get to see with the professionals when they arrive. I think it's a wonderful way to lead that up.
And that sort of educational outreach is a big part, I know, of what Clues does with, you know, as many of the performances as you can.
Yes. I think that's, for those that want to avail themselves of that, it is available. For those that want to just come at 8 o'clock or hopefully 5 till, get into their seats, they can do
please.
That too.
Please, at 5 till.
But it is. I think it's a great resource that you don't get everywhere. You know? That's going to be just, I think, an amazing, amazing modern dance experience. And
excellent.
Paul Taylor here.
And then after Paul Taylor?
Well, then it's a bit of a powerhouse, and we've got Blue Man Group coming. And
that's huge. This is so fun.
It's a lot of fun. And it's going to be something new for us. We're going to do 5 performances of Blue Man Group.
Okay.
And in most cases for Clues Presents, it's a one night only. You get one shot to see this, but this is a big show. So we're going to have it for Friday, November 12th through the 14th. We'll do 5 performances. And, you know, I've been hard pressed to find anybody who doesn't know who Blue Man Group is. And, you know, they're so iconic. You see the image and you know exactly who it is. But this is, you know, it's performance art. It's percussion. It's music. It's sort of like using found objects as musical instruments. It's both, you know, comedic and artistic. And, you know, a lot of people don't realize, I mean, they've been around for, it's over 25 years now.
Yeah.
I mean, this has been a long-standing tradition for Blue Man Group, and they're going to be premiering new pieces on this tour, so when you come and see them in Indianapolis, even if you've seen them in Chicago or if you've seen them in Boston.
What I wanted to ask you, because I know the show's evolved quite a bit. I actually saw Blue Man Group many, many, many years ago in their first year in a regular theater in New York City, long time ago. But I know the show has evolved quite a lot since then. And so, you know, it's bigger. I mean, more music. It seems like year by year I keep hearing it evolves.
It always evolves. And, you know, what we have for this one is it's really the combination of sort of the retrospective of all of the Blue Man Group performances around the world.
Yeah, okay.
But also with new pieces that people have never seen before.
Cool.
So if you saw them in, you know, New York, if you saw them in Orlando at Universal Studios, you're going to come to Indianapolis, you're going to see something entirely new.
Cool. Yeah. That'll be great. Now, what are the dates again for that?
That's
the 5 shows.
That's November 12th through November 14th. And there'll be a Friday, 8 p.m., there'll be a Saturday, 2 and 8, and there'll be a Sunday, 2 and 6:30.
And Blue Man Group is just, I mean, tons of fun for the whole family, too.
Yeah. It's definitely a very family-friendly
Unless you have
show.
An issue with marshmallows.
Well, and cream anyway, cheese. Right. Or, and there'll be the splatter zone, so, yeah. You know, you've still got that. So, they're, again, those the old favorites.
Excellent. So, so how do you follow up after Blue Man?
Well, you know.
You can't really. So,
it's tough, but, you know, that one's in November. We take a little break so people can kind of rest a little bit, get through the holidays, and then we'll bring everybody back in February, on February 19th, and we'll have the Manhattan Transfer and John Pizzarelli.
Nice. Great music.
And it's, you know, we love Manhattan Transfer. We've had Manhattan Transfer a number of times. You know, they are legends within vocal jazz, or within vocal music in general. I mean, they mm-hmm. sort of cross multiple genres. I know they've got a new album out of all Chick Corea songs. But we wanted to sort of up the ante. Mm-hmm. And, you know, so it's a double bill. And we've got John Pizzarelli on the show as well, who's a fantastic jazz guitarist and vocalist, has a great album of Duke Ellington standards out now. And that's a really great jazz show for mm-hmm. for really for anybody. You know, it's not going to be so over the top difficult that, and I'm a huge lover of jazz, but there are a number of times where I can sit in the club and go, I have no idea what's going on.
Right. This one is certainly very easily accessible.
It's going to be easily accessible and entertaining. And I really think you get a lot of bang for your buck on a show like that to have two full sets from two really established artists. And, you know, and Manhattan Transfer, they are legends.
Yeah.
You know, it's exciting show.
Great stuff. And then as you get into the spring.
And after that, we're going to have the return of Kodo, and that's Sunday, February 27th.
Now, Kodo is the big drums, right?
Yes, Kodo is the Japanese drummers, mm-hmm. and these are called it's called Taiko.
You can hear them coming now.
And exactly. another show that Clues has enjoyed being able to present, and we don't get many opportunities to do that. They are from Japan, so mm-hmm. it's you know, every 5-6 years they decide they'll do a world tour. And they said they were coming back, and we immediately said, yes, we have to have Kodo come back.
Cool.
Fantastic show. It's very family-friendly. Even though it's a lot of percussion, it's sort of the Japanese stomp, I guess.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
You know what I mean? There's a lot of dance in it. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of movement to it. It's not solely just people banging on drums for a couple hours, and it's really a cultural experience. You get to kind of see, like, it truly is. I mean, having somebody who's been to Japan, this really is what taiko ensembles are like in Japan, and these guys are the pinnacle. So that's an exciting show.
Good. And then to close out the season,
we close out with Joffrey Ballet.
Nice.
Of course, coming down from Chicago.
Mm-hmm. It's a great compliment to Paul Taylor. I mean, very different styles, mm-hmm. but certainly there's a lot of cross appeal for both as well.
Well, and I think they're both, in that reference, very strong American companies.
Yes.
And Joffrey Ballet, you know, has a very long history and is going to come down with a rep show, so we're going to get to see them do four different pieces. They're bringing down 40 dancers, so it's going to be a really wonderful,
it's
wonderful
a huge cast.
It is, and I was kind of surprised. I thought, really? I didn't, you know, there were some pieces on the program I'm unfamiliar with, so it's okay, well, this will be interesting to see how we fill Clue's stage with Joffrey dancers, which, you know, they're doing, you know, some traditional pieces from their repertoire, mm-hmm. as well as then some new things that are coming from some new choreographers. And it'll be interesting to see not only what is happening choreographically as that evolves over time, but also to see how the company is adapting to those changes, how they are taking on that new rep and showing their roots and what they've, you know, have as their foundation from Gerald Arpino and Robert Joffrey, to where they are now under new directorship and I think a new day in touring for the company is coming. So they are doing more and more of that and realizing that so that people can recognize those that aren't coming or going to Chicago or maybe going to some other larger areas to see these companies, they can see them when they're here.
That's great.
In their area.
Now, of course, for all the shows, you can buy individual tickets, but you guys do season tickets, all that information as far as how to do that and to pick your favorite plans available on your website or give you guys a call. What's the best way?
You can do either. You can go to our website, clueshall.org. There's a graphic right on the main page. You can click there. Or you can call our box office, 317-940-6444, for our information line. So if you're interested in subscribing, we can help you over the phone, or you can download the order form on the website, or you can come by and visit us. We're on the campus of Butler University. You know, and if you're interested in single tickets, those will be on sale September 10th.
Okay.
So we always recommend to people that if you're really interested in one or two shows, the season is the best way to go.
And then you're guaranteed you can get great seats.
You're going to get great seats. You're going to save a lot of money. And we feel like there's enough, you know, really, really fantastic performances that
the
season
is
the way to go.
Well, it sounds like the best season ever, so congratulations.
Thank you very much.
You're right.
Travis DiNicola with James Kramer, Community Relations Manager for Clues Memorial Hall, and Joshua Lingenfelter, the Director of Marketing. Information about the upcoming Clues Presents season and subscriptions can be found at clueshall.org, CLOWES hall.org. You're listening to The Art of the Matter on WFYI 90.1 FM Public Radio.
Leave it to the Stutz Artists Association to figure out a creative way to be part of the citywide Spirit and Place Festival's theme of Food for Thought. Sharon Gamble recently spoke with curator Kate Overreich and participant Kathleen Stevens about the concept for the exhibit and why you should never take Kate's purse away from her.
How did the Uncovered Food for Thought project start at the Stutz?
At the Stutz, it began actually before Spirit and Place. We knew what their theme was going to be.
Uh-huh.
I've been involved with creating sketchbooks since college.
Which I have to say, Kate, wasn't that long ago.
You're
a young woman.
It wasn't. I graduated in 2005.
Okay.
Yeah. I went to Ball State. I had a professor who was very much about keeping an artist's sketchbook as a tool for creating your future and final work. So that's how I got started in it, and I've always wanted to do a show or participate in one of sketchbooks to show the process of art, and haven't really found a little, some side projects, so just sort of came up with, let's create a show. And when the Spirit and Place theme was announced, you know, Food for Thought, it was sort of an instant, this is our way of digesting our ideas and turning them into a finished work of art. So I wanted to show that process. In addition to that, we came up with doing a cookbook for the show. We're partnering with some chefs and cooks and foodies who will also be exhibiting, so to speak, their dishes for the opening only, but we'll have them in there on November 12th.
Exhibiting their dishes?
Mm-hmm.
You've got to tell more about that.
Well, we found that the process of creating for a chef or a cook is very similar to how an artist creates as far as gathering ideas and inspirations from other places. In how they create a signature dish. So some of them keep journals and sketchbooks as well, so we wanted to bring them into it and really talk about how, not only just a dish, how that it's, you know, formed, how it's inspired till the end of it, how it's, you know, ends up on your table, but also look at the, excuse me, just the process from start to finish for them as well, and pairing it with how an artist works as well.
Hmm. Cool parallelism.
Yeah.
Kathleen, have you kept sketchbooks your entire artistic career?
Well, I have always written down my ideas and sketched and done all the different things like that, but they've always been like on grid paper, post-it notes, here, there, everywhere.
Back of an envelope?
Yes. And where are all those things right now? Who knows? But I've been working more since I was talking to Kate about it. I'm working more in a journal. I have several different ones that are in different places, but I write and do poetry and my sketches, and when I plan my designs for my work, I'm always writing something down. So I'm trying to get it more in a package to where I can find it, and then so I can execute my ideas and turn them into my artwork.
The different notebooks in different places, is that just for convenience? So if there's one in your car, you're stopped at a red light, something hits you,
yes,
you can write it down.
Yes.
It's not that this one is for this project, this other notebook is for some other project.
It is kind of that way, and if I were only that organized, I do have different notebooks for different jobs and different things, but I do like to try to keep something handy for when an idea strikes, or when you're inspired, when you see something, when you're just driving down the road, when you stop at the next light, you can write down, jot down your idea. Or if you wake up in the middle of the night and, oh, that's how I can solve that, you can write it down, and it really helps to have all of that.
Does that happen to you, either of you, very often, Kate? You wake up in the middle of the night with a sudden, aha, that's how I might do that.
I don't necessarily know that I would wake up in the middle of the night, but I've had some insomnia problems where I had to think through something. But, yes, I keep a sketchbook on or near me pretty much at all times. I will say it's the reason that I often have a larger purse. People make fun of me for that.
You don't make fun without it.
Exactly. You know, two things I usually always have with me are my sketchbook and my camera as recording for any future project.
Without revealing too much, tell me what the shape and form of what goes into these sketchbooks might be. Is it mostly descriptions? Is it truly, I mean, as the name would suggest, sketches? Is it ideas about color combinations, all of the above, none of the above?
Mine is a little bit of everything. It's thumbnails for if I'm trying to work out a composition of a painting.
Mm-hmm.
It's lyrics to songs that I like.
Hmm.
It's my grocery list. It's, you know, sometimes it's the only piece of paper I have. Appointments, yes.
Yes.
I do believe today is in there right now. it's often the first, you know, piece of paper that's handy. But it is writing, it's drawing. Sometimes it's even finished paintings that I need to work out a color study right then and there. And I'll go ahead and complete something in it. And then later it'll probably become a finished painting. Mm-hmm. Or I'll like a little bit of it and take it into something else.
Yes, you can break them into different pieces and turn them into different artworks.
Exactly.
And if you're writing and you only have so much room and so much time and something else comes up, I've been known to write one direction and then I'll turn it the other way and write the other direction so I can keep those ideas separate so they don't get jumbled
mm-hmm,
up.
Mm-hmm. That sounds familiar. You know, this question of memory comes up for me a lot talking with artists. I under-trust my memory. I
mm-hmm.
write too much stuff down, I think. But I'm always afraid that I'll never be able to, that idea will be too
mm-hmm.
elusive or that vision will be too elusive. Do you have this issue? I mean, how does memory factor into your creative
process? I feel exactly the same way that you do about that. I really want to write the idea down because life is so busy now. We have so many different things coming at us from every different direction. It's not like it was 20 years ago, 10 years ago, even 5 years ago. So it's nice to have a note or a sketch or a drawing of maybe just even how something made you feel when you saw it. That's the beginning of maybe an artwork that you might do 2 years down the road, a month down the road. You don't know. It's just nice to have a note of that to go back through.
I agree with that. I have these sort of fleeting things that are in the moment. It was something that hit me. Sometimes it'll be something like a title of a future piece.
Yeah.
That in the moment I heard it somewhere, I pieced it together while I was driving to work, and I know that it's going to be the title of a painting down the line, but if I don't write it down right then, it's gone.
And with me, I'll see a pretty cloud and like, oh.
Yeah.
So it's good to write them down.
Is there a correlating place in your studios where you maybe make assemblies of raw materials and kind of do a draft by, you know, staging these items together, staging a photograph or staging a picture you've torn out of a magazine together?
For me, it's the whole studio. I'm stuff on the wall, stuff on the drawing table, on the easel. My work is very layered, and so I tend to build up a lot of surfaces and then take them away or paint them back over in an effort to get a finished piece. So it's a lot of back and forth. So really it's a big mess, but I know where everything is.
Don't help me, please.
Yeah, exactly.
Stay out.
I apologize if we want to have a kind of, you know, any kind of meeting in the studio, or you're just going to have to work around the.
Yeah, well, you're surrounded by a lot of other artists who
exactly.
cannot, no matter what their personal style, I can't imagine that people are not sympathetic to,
exactly.
oh, I see, this style works for you.
Mm-hmm.
Might not be how I do
right.
it. Exactly. Actually, I talked with a Stutz artist the other day who works with crystals and who described her crystal cabinet in which everything's color coordinated and you know, that worked in that part of the studio, but maybe not the whole studio.
Exactly, yeah.
Mine is different piles here and there, and I will find something with, I work with a lot of different mediums, so I'll find something that will work with one of them, and I will kind of make little piles here and little piles there, things as I find them. Oh, I really like this together. I'm not really sure how I'm going to do it or how I'm going to work it into something, but when you refer back to the journal or the sketchbook, you can go back through and find something. Oh, this might work perfectly for this.
Do you ever have trouble, obviously you both have studios at the Stutz. Do you ever have trouble confining your artwork to your studio? Uh-oh.
I'm sorry, yeah. I've been known to put projects together in my car.
I love that.
The kitchen.
A rolling gallery.
Any flat surface. Anywhere will become a studio for me.
I love that I have a big open space and really nice neighbors outside of my studio. When I do have all those piles going on inside, and I need to look at something in a cleaner, more open space.
I can borrow one.
You know, larger floor space in the hallway, and you know, thankfully I love my neighbors in my little hallway that have been so nice.
There are a lot of good neighbors.
Speaking of your neighbors, how did you decide there are about 17 artists who will be part of Uncovered Food for Thought? How did you put out a call for volunteers, or how did this process start?
We didn't actually. This was a show that I had been thinking about for, it's probably been about a year and a half. Mm-hmm. So I started contacting artists that I knew kept sketchbooks. Either I had seen them myself or I had heard about them and later saw them. There were a couple of people that their work was strong enough that, and then there was some mention that they kept a sketchbook as well. And I wanted to see what that looked like for different artists. I mean, I know I've got a stack of used sketchbook or filled ones in my studio, and I just wanted to see what other people did. So they were picked sort of curator's choice on it. A few were recommended to me and went from there. I wanted it to be a variety of artists who have kept books for a long time and those that were very new, just to see the different perspectives on how people relate to keeping one.
I have to ask, you know, you're in the catbird seat as far as being able to see other people's processes. Have you uncovered anything yet that you've adopted for your own? Oh, what a great idea. I'm going to do that, too. And you don't have to name names.
Okay. Good. You know, I haven't seen a lot of the books yet. I'm not sure. I'm so curious to see it because for a lot of these artists, I know their work and I've known them for most of them for quite a while, and I'm interested to see what inspires them when the books come to light. I'm trying not to. I am getting antsy. I want to see them, but at the same time, I don't want to influence them.
You don't want to be invasive,
right?
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't want to be invasive. I don't want to influence what they do.
Or water down the process.
Or water down the process. Yeah, I don't want to tell them how to keep
it organic.
Don't want people to be self-conscious.
And when you see them all together, then you might see similarities, but you might see different things, and you might have the I think I might try that. And I think that will happen with all of us and all of the people that come to see.
I don't doubt we'll be inspired by each other's
books. Definitely.
When they finally come together.
Oh, yeah, I can't wait to see them.
Do you date your sketchbooks?
I do not.
I tried once. I tend to also cut up pages in my sketchbooks, and then, you know, I'll draw something on one page, but it relates to something else, so I'll cut it out and bring it back.
Sure.
And so dating it just got a little confusing.
Convoluted, sure.
Yeah. You know, something that happened in 2005 came after 2009.
Right.
It was, it got to be a mess. So I just got stopped.
Mine are dated mostly by projects that I was working on. I can look at it and say, I know I did that in 2005 or 1975
I'm curious, do you try to avoid looking back at old work? Do you ever think, how did I get here from there? Let me look back at slides of my previous work from X number of years ago. Or was that then and this is now, and maybe you don't want to.
I always look back at what I've done.
I
think that it's important to know where you came from and to build on that. Lately, I've been looking at a lot more of my work because my parents wanted out of their house. But and figuring out what to do with it. I'm a lifelong artist, so I've built up quite a collection. There's some things in their house that I'm sure I don't even remember. But I do think it's important to look at what you've done before. It builds on what you're doing now and what you will do.
There's a little bit of therapeutic angle mm-hmm. to this whole process.
There really is. The artist way. They encourage
right.
you to do the morning pages.
Right.
And I've done the morning pages for quite a while. And they encourage you at first, don't look back at this because this is a therapeutic thing.
For somebody who's not familiar, explain what the morning pages are.
The morning pages, the artist's way, the morning pages is a way to clear your head. When you get up in the morning, the first thing you do, three pages. Write three pages, and it really doesn't matter. It can be your laundry list. It can be this song you're thinking of, or a poem you're working on, or anything, or just how you're feeling about your neighbor not mowing their grass, or whatever it might be. But the thing is to get that all out on the pages, and that cleans your hair, clears your head, clears your spirit for the rest of the day. And it really works, and it really does help. But they do say when you first start, don't go back and read them. Just keep going because the process is evolving and you mm-hmm. grow as you do it. And then later on, you can go back. But you can. I incorporate morning pages in with my sketchbook. I mean, it's everything in mine.
Mm-hmm. So you better make sure you know where they are.
Yes.
Sharon Gamble with artists Kate Oberreich and Kathleen Stevens. If you find that your appetite is whetted for uncovered food for thought, an exhibition of the creative process, we'll mark your calendars for Friday, November 12th for the opening.
Hey, Travis.
Yes, Sharon.
We have to be fast because summer's winding down.
There's so much going on. There's so much to do.
So our calendar
that we call
What Do We Do is really, really short.
Yeah. Basically, online just tell people, go to the Fringe this weekend. It's open. It's going on. It's downtown on Mass Avenue. IndieFringe.org for more information. 280 shows, 10 days. What more do you need?
Young People's Fringe, Visual Fringe. You got it. Brazilian Summerfest 2010 this Sunday, 5 to 9. At the Athenaeum.
Sounds like fun. And we'll be back next week with a little bit longer calendar we call.
What Will We Do?
You're listening to The Art of the Matter, a weekly show about the arts in Indianapolis and Central Indiana. Your hosts are Sharon Gamble and Travis DiNicola. If your arts organization has an event or activity of which you think we should be aware, please contact us at least 3 weeks in advance. You can write us at The Art of the Matter, care of WFYI, 1630 North Meridian Street, Indianapolis, Indiana, 46202. Or you can email us at artofthematter@wfyi.org. You can also hear The Art of the Matter on wfyi.org.
If you've been listening lately to The Art of the Matter, you've certainly heard about the Palladium sponsorship of this show. And if you live or work in Carmel, you've probably driven by the construction site for the new Center for the Performing Arts, where the Palladium is located. But what exactly is the center? What will be taking place there? And what's the big deal about this American Songbook? Travis DiNicola spoke with Stephen B. Libman, the President and Chief Executive Officer of the Center for the Performing Arts, to make sense of it all.
For full disclosure, the Palladium is a great sponsor of Art of the Matter this year, so I will just say thank you for that.
You're very welcome. We're glad to be a part of the cultural landscape of Central Indiana.
I really want to use this opportunity to chat with you especially for our listeners who are not exactly familiar with the Palladium and the whole Center for the Performing Arts in Carmel to really help us understand it a little bit better. And let me just start by saying that just a couple of weeks ago I was at a show, Jersey Boys, when it was
mm-hmm.
in town,
right.
And I overheard a conversation of a couple of people talking, and I was like, oh, this is a great show, which it was. And, is this what you think they'll have shows like this up at the Palladium when it opens? And, and I immediately, turned around and said, you know what, they may have shows, they have a theater up there, but the Palladium isn't actually for theatrical productions, it's
right.
for music. So help us understand that a little bit better, because I know there is some confusion.
Well, first, I'm glad you saw Jersey Boys, which is a show we created when I was at La Jolla Playhouse. So
oh,
we're
very, fantastic.
Very proud of that production. We will not be doing road shows, touring Broadway productions. That's not what any of our three venues can
anything
can
at
handle.
The center. Is right. Not going to be doing
nothing at the center will be handling touring Broadway material. The Palladium is the 1,600-seat concert hall, and as a concert hall, it is designed primarily for musical performances. We will be bringing in solo artists, great orchestras. It's the home to the Carmel Symphony Orchestra. In addition, the Indianapolis Wind Symphony will perform there, the Indianapolis Chamber Orchestra. Anyone who has anything to do with classical music will probably want to perform in the Palladium because it is designed to be an acoustically perfect concert hall. Plus, we'll have a country series there, a Great American Songbook series curated by Michael Feinstein, and a jazz series. So music is really the art form that will weave its way through the Palladium. We'll do some dance. We can also do opera. But it's really not set up for theater because we don't have a proscenium and we don't have wings. However, the
and,
other
and for those of those people who are say, what's a proscenium and wings? Just to be clear about that, essentially, and I've been very fortunate enough I could get a tour of the space a couple months ago as it's still being created, and there's a very large stage, but there's no fly space above the stage. There's no space off to the sides.
Correct.
There's no area to fly in sets or big curtains or anything like that.
The proscenium, basically, in any theater, if you look at Indianapolis Repertory Theater, for example, a proscenium creates two spaces, the stage space, and when the curtain is down, then the audience space. In a concert hall, everyone is in the same space. You're all in the exact same room, and the stage juts out into the audience, really.
Yes.
So there's no fly space. Fly space is the area where scenery goes up and down.
Mm-hmm.
So there's none of that. And because we don't have a proscenium, there's no wing space. Wing spaces are the parts on stage right and stage left that the audience doesn't see. That's where the actors and the dancers go when they're not on stage. And that's where scenery can go when it's not on stage. We don't have that in the Palladium because it's all everyone's
that's
in one
space.
That's
not what it's designed for.
Exactly. That's not what it's designed
for. And though you could, I'm sure, have speakers or perhaps one-man shows or things like that, which you may do, again, it's for the acoustics.
The Palladium is designed to be an acoustically perfect concert hall. We've been told, and we'll study this soon, I want to talk about the tuning of the hall, that you could actually hear your heart beat when all the doors are closed and there's silence in the room. And it is designed so that music dominates what happens in that hall. And I also want to mention we have two other venues.
Right.
The Palladium opens in January.
Mm-hmm.
The 200-seat Studio Theater opens in March. And the Studio Theater is designed to be a flexible space. We can have four or five different seating configurations. It's an ideal venue for emerging artists. And any genre can work there. We will do jazz concerts, classical concerts, theater, and dance. The 500-seat theater is your traditional proscenium theater.
And that's the Tarkington.
That's
right?
Exactly. The 500-seat theater is the Tarkington. It is the primary home of the Civic Theater. But there will be, between the three venues, seven resident companies who will perform in those three venues on a regular basis. Interestingly enough, in the Tarkington Theater, while we won't do Broadway shows, that stage is, in fact, large enough to accommodate a Broadway show.
Okay.
And Michael Feinstein and I have talked about creating original material here in central Indiana, out of the gazing eyes of the media on either coast, and then we would transfer that material commercially, perhaps, to Broadway. So while we will not do a Broadway roadshow like Jersey Boys, we could, however, engage in an effort to create shows like Jersey Boys, and we think that that's pretty.
That'd be pretty cool. So, just to be cool and to reiterate and to be clear here, so the Center for Performing Arts essentially it's a large plaza consisting of a number of buildings, three different performance spaces, and the first one that's going to open up is the Palladium.
Exactly, the Palladium is the first space to open up in January 2011.
Now, I want to say that there were three things that really stood out for me when I got my tour a couple months ago, talking about this acoustically perfect space. Mm-hmm. One of the things was just the craftsmanship that was going in to the plaster and to make sure that the plaster was so thick and perfect, and these like fourth generation craftsmen working on that. The second thing was that the interior space, and correct me in any of this, please, is essentially an enormous sort of cement cube, if you will, of like, you know, 12-inch cement walls. It's sort of like a building within a building.
Correct.
And the final thing that, and this just amazed me, was that, and what I was told was that the physical plant machinery, like air conditioners mm-hmm. and heaters, is actually sort of on these springboards so that the vibrations don't go into the rest of the building?
All of that is correct. This building was
That's all pretty cool stuff.
It's amazing. There's not another performing arts center or building like the Palladium being constructed in the entire Western Hemisphere right now like this. Mm-hmm. There could be one in the future, but there's nothing being built like this now. The exterior is comprised of all hand-carved Indiana limestone. Artisans hand-carved every block. Every column that you see is hand-carved, and if you stand on the steps of the Palladium and study those columns, you'll see that not every line is exactly parallel. Well, that's okay, because it was hand-carved.
And Indiana limestone.
And Indiana, all Indiana limestone. When you enter the building, there will be gorgeous Italian marble on the floor, and that's for the exterior lobby space.
Mm-hmm.
Then when you enter the other building, as you referred to it, you walk through doorways that are 2 feet thick.
Okay.
That creates the separation between the outer lobby and the concert hall space, which is why they say you could fire a gun in the lobby and you will not hear it inside the concert hall.
Which leaves, it could be a really interesting murder mystery, but anyway.
Right. That could be an interesting murder mystery.
Now, I think the most exciting things, I'm sure, for you is you're planning all the activities that lead up to the official opening of the Palladium, which is going to happen in January 2011. This fall, you're actually doing a series of what are called tuning concerts.
Correct.
And help me understand this, because I know that part of what's going to make the Palladium so versatile with the sound are these large sort of glass panels that hang. But you got to figure out like how to move them for different types of music?
Exactly. Everything that takes place in that building is immense. And just to talk for a second, you mentioned the heating and ventilation system. Technically, part of it is about almost a quarter mile away from us. That the cold and hot water is piped underground to the Palladium so that when the air conditioning and heating system is turned on, you won't hear anything.
You guys really did think of everything.
They thought of everything. There are enormous fans in the basement. Everything is on springs so that there's no vibration. And the fans are so large. Apparently, these are the fans that are used on aircraft carriers. These are enormous fans to move tremendous volumes of air without any sound. Now, back to the tuning of the hall. We have this amazing concert hall. And on November 8th, we receive what's called the Certificate of Occupancy. And that's when my staff can go to work and figure out how to use everything in that building, sound equipment, lighting equipment, rigging equipment. We have to figure out how to use the box office, how to make sure the ushers can seat people properly, that the scanners work well when you come into the building, we scan your tickets. And, as you mentioned, we tune the hall for music. There are glass panels inside the concert hall that can raise and lower at different levels.
Mm-hmm.
As we speak now, we don't know what those levels are going to be, but we're working with 50 local arts organizations, everything from gospel choirs to jazz, bluegrass, rock, classical music. The Indianapolis Symphony will come up and help us tune the hall, the Chamber Orchestra, the Carmel Symphony. We will, through these 3 months, November, December, and January, figure out what's the best level for each of these genres. So for classical music, an orchestra with 120 musicians will be different from a solo artist with a single violin, which is different from jazz and different from rock.
Will you actually create, if you will, presets then?
Yes.
So that, you know, the computer knows, like, oh, you've got a jazz band with bass and piano and drums, and so, you know, this is preset 367?
I think it's probably an oversimplification, but that's about right. We will, through 3 months of testing through these 50 concerts, we will know so that when we bring in, say, an orchestra from Europe, we can't take the time to have them come in and rehearse for a week. They're going to arrive Friday morning, and they have to be ready to go Friday night.
Mm-hmm.
We will, in a sense, pull out our playbook and say, okay, for an orchestra that seats 120 musicians on that stage, this is the optimal level for the acoustical tile, the acoustical glass, and we also have curtains that go around the building. Those curtains are not used often if it's all acoustic and will be used if it's amplified sound. But we don't know if they'll be halfway, partway, all the way until we get in there and test it.
This is going to be kind of a fun experiment, I would think, for the arts organizations participating, because essentially they'll be coming in, and my understanding is they'll be able to, you know, invite audiences to come and hear this. But as they're playing, you'll be starting and stopping them and making adjustments.
Right.
And
the audiences are participating in a very important process. First, these performances are all private. They're not advertised to the public. So if you're the Carmel Symphony or, say, the Indianapolis Symphony, you will invite your patrons and your audience members to this performance. We'll have reserved tickets in advance so that we can practice and figure out how to seat people in the hall. And there may, in fact, be a lot of stopping and starting. The acousticians, Artek from New York City, may say, please, maestro, can you go back and do that again? We need to hear the percussion again. Because then they can adjust. And that will work because we'll probably interview people and say, can you hear this? We'll have sensitive equipment throughout the hall. And a lot of us are going to be running around the hall so that we can sit in almost every section. Ideally, it shouldn't matter where you sit in that concert hall. The sound needs to be the same.
Mm-hmm.
But it's going to take 3 months' worth of work to make that happen.
Of course, of course. Wow, what a great process.
It's an incredible process, and we know that we're going to become an important part of the cultural landscape of this community. And every organization I arrived here in September, I have been in touch with and had meetings with, I would say, representatives of almost every music organization.
Mm-hmm.
And without a doubt, everyone is excited about the Palladium and cannot wait to get in there. And it's sort of like driving a Maserati. They cannot wait to test drive this amazing vehicle. And what Carmel is sort of giving the community is this amazing gift of music, and it is our job to make sure that local organizations can use the space as often as they want to, and that we will bring to Indiana the finest music that the world has to offer. What's interesting is prior to the construction of the Palladium, a lot of major arts organizations skipped over Indiana because there wasn't a performing arts center like this. We're now going to become part of major international tour routes. We're not ready to announce our season yet because we're still putting it together, but we are bringing in, for example, one orchestra that's kicking off their U.S. tour here in Indiana. Major orchestra. That never would have happened without the construction of the Palladium. And we also view that it's very important that we partner with local organizations. Mm-hmm. So for any group that we bring in from the outside, we intend to create a partnership with local arts organizations so that their audiences can have the opportunity to view these amazing artists.
Let me ask you about another element of the Palladium, and that is Michael Feinstein's role. There's been a lot of talk about Feinstein's Great American Songbook mm-hmm. and how it's going to be there at the Palladium.
Yes.
And again, referencing someone I was talking to just a week ago said, now, wait, so he is like this big book of songs that they're going to have on display? And I said, well, it's a little bit more than that. But essentially, it is a museum-quality collection of, what, music, memorabilia, ephemera that Feinstein's put together?
It is. I mean, Michael is really the premier interpreter of the Great American Songbook, and he performs this unique American art form all over the world. So it's wonderful to partner with Michael. He's a great artist, and I thoroughly enjoy working with him. His collection, which is the largest collection of memorabilia affiliated with the Great American Songbook, is coming here. So what does that mean? It's original sheet music from George and Ira Gershwin and Irving Berlin. It's the rehearsal tapes from Rosemary Clooney. Michael has 10,078s that have yet to be cataloged in his home in New York City. This collection is spread throughout. It's in his home in L.A., his mother's house in Los Angeles, a warehouse in Los Angeles, his home in New York, warehouses in New York and in New Jersey.
I'm guessing his mom's pretty happy about moving the collection out then.
I think his mother probably is. The collection would fill a 70,000-square-foot building.
Wow.
We will have on display a small percentage of that collection.
Okay.
What's exciting, though, is this unique American treasure, it really is an American treasure, is moving to Indiana. And this is, in many ways, part of the birthplace of the Great American Songbook. Artists like Hoagy Carmichael and Cole Porter were born here.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, people often say, well, Stephen, is there an audience for music in central Indiana? I'm new to this community, but maybe there's something in the water here. But look at what we have when it comes to music. In addition to Hoagy Carmichael and Cole Porter, this is the headquarters for the International Violin Competition, the American Pianist Association, the Indianapolis Symphony, the Carmel Symphony. School of Music at IU and Butler, two outstanding universities. Mm-hmm. So there's something pretty special about music that's happening in this community, and we're happy to become a part of that.
That's great. Now with his songbook, with this collection, would it be a rotating exhibit? Will there be, you know, you mentioned like these recordings. Will there be an opportunity to actually listen to it? Will scholars be coming here? And
ultimately, if you're familiar with, the Huntington Museum in Pasadena, which has one of the world's great collections of manuscripts and books, if you're a scholar, you have the opportunity to go back into the archives and actually touch and read and study those manuscripts. It is Michael's goal to do the same thing here. Mm-hmm. If you're a scholar, you'll be able to have access to these very rare archives. In addition, those archives will be digitized. So you can be a scholar in Moscow and pull up Irving Berlin's original sheet music and actually turn the pages online.
Wow, okay.
And the entire collection will be digitized that way. The goal is to have this collection, parts of this collection, on tour really throughout the world, because we just couldn't display everything here. And Michael is sort of an evangelist about the Great American Songbook. Mm-hmm. We all believe passionately in this art form because it's part of jazz, it's part of Broadway music and film music, and it is America's unique contribution to the performing arts.
Stephen, let me just review here very quickly. The Palladium will be opening in January of 2011, right. And tuning will be going on this fall. The other two buildings, the Tarkington Theater and then the Studio Theater, when will those be opening?
The Studio Theater opens in March 2011, and mm-hmm. the Tarkington opens in August 2011. So we have phased openings for each of these amazing venues.
Travis DiNicola with Stephen B. Libman, the President and Chief Executive Officer of the Center for the Performing Arts in Carmel. For more information about the center, visit thecenterfortheperformingarts.org. Once again, thecenterfortheperformingarts.org. The opening night gala for the Palladium will take place on January 29th, 2011. Thanks for joining us today. The music for today's show is courtesy of the Buscelli Wallerab Jazz Orchestra from their Heart and Soul album, available through Owl Studios at owlstudios.com.
Please listen to The Art of the Matter again next Friday at 8 p.m. and Saturday at 4. I'll get a preview of the Indianapolis City Ballet's second Evening with the Stars.
I'll find out what's going on at the Indianapolis Arts Center's open house.
And I'll learn all about the work of Culturati Kids, what they're doing. Plus, there's our arts calendar events we call
What Do We Do? So please listen next Friday at 8 and Saturday at 4 to The Art of the Matter here on WFYI.
You've been listening to The Art of the Matter, made possible by the ongoing support from listeners like you and from the Palladium at the Center for the Performing Arts, opening in January 2011. The Art of the Matter. Your hosts are Sharon Gamble and Travis DiNicola. Today's Art of the Matter was produced and edited by Travis DiNicola. The Art of the Matter on 90.1 FM, Indianapolis.